Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.
So how did this go?
With this book?
Yeah.
How did it go over?
Yeah, how did it start?
Well, it's just come out in the market about a year ago.
Oh, really?
And when you see it in a major location in Pickwick and Larry Hedman's bookshop and the major bookshops, then you know it's going. If they put it in a major spot, you know it has to be moving.
Book myself for about $40.
I'm sorry?
Just book myself for about 40, 50 bucks.
I've seen it go for about 35, but I think my book will be able to be about $25. That's what my book, I'm going to try and keep it at.
Because the Disney book was sold for 40.
Mm-hmm. I worked at Disney at the time, so I was one of the fortunate employees.
I got one for 25.
Yeah, I did also.
Yeah, this is.
But we are limited, you know, a bit for time now. But if I can just get this question,
If you ask me the questions, I'll try to answer.
Shoot, in a limited kind of way, because that's all I can really do in my book, anyhow. How did you first get interested in cartoons? That's a good general question to start out with.
Well, I was interested in cartoons, I guess, ever since I was a kid, really, but not in motion pictures. I didn't conceive the idea at all. I guess there wasn't much of it. As a kid, I used to see Aesop's Fables and things like that, you know, Terry Toons in the theater, but I didn't relate to that. I always wanted to do newspaper cartoons. How I got started into this was kind of unique in a way, because there was an outfit called United Film Ad Service in Kansas City, Missouri. And
are you originally from?
That's where I'm from. And Walt Disney was from there too. Mm-hmm. It happened that Walt Disney was working at United Film Ad Service prior to my being there. And when Walt Disney left for California, and there was a fellow by the name of Bob Iwerks who worked for Walt Disney, mm-hmm. and I think people know who he was, a fellow by the name of Hugh Harmon and Rudy Ising didn't work there, I'm sorry, but Bugs Hardaway. They had an ad, United Film Ad Service put an ad in the paper. They wanted an office boy who could draw. And so I answered that ad. But when I got to the doorstep, I chickened out because I figured this was professional work and I didn't think I was good enough for it. But so I left.
Mm-hmm.
I felt, you know, kind of guilty that I had passed it up. But about a week later, the ad appeared again. So I went down there, and this time I had enough nerve to go in.
Mm-hmm.
And apply for the job, and they hired me. Well, Walt wasn't there at the time, but Hugh Harmon and Bob Iwerks was there, and Bugs Hardaway, and those names probably you'll probably have heard or will hear.
Yeah, I've been
later.
Hearing them crop up all along. Yeah.
Bob Iwerks was ready to leave for California because Walt was out here.
Mm-hmm.
And needed help because I think he had a series sold of animation to convince somebody. I think it was RKO Studios. And Ub left, and Hugh Harmon was there. Pardon me, I think that's that meeting. I left off at, So they hired me, and Ub left. Bob Iwerks left for California, and Hugh Harmon was planning on going after Ub left, so he taught me whatever he could about animation, which I knew nothing about. And so he told me to get a book from the library called Lutz Book of Animation, and I worked from that. And then he left. and I was there all alone and knew nothing about animation, so I picked it up from the book. But luckily for me, the people that were I was working for knew less than I did, so I got by with it. Then I got a letter from Walt, because Hugh Harmon had told him that I had pretty good possibilities of being a good animator. And so Walt wrote to me and asked me if I wanted to come to California. It took a little time for me to make up my mind, because I really didn't know much about it. In fact, I told Walt, I said, heck, I wasn't really an animator, but I was willing to learn. And he said, well, if you're willing, you know, fine.
You had all your roots there in
Kansas City.
It's hard just to pick up and move.
So, yeah, sure, my family was there. So anyhow, I convinced myself I should go and try it, so I did. I came out to California where Walt had that little studio in Hyperion. And there was four or five people working in that one room. Walt was one of the men, and Ub was an animator that I worked right next to, and Hugh, and a fellow by the name of Rudy Icy. We were all animating. And Walt used to, he didn't animate, but he timed all our stuff. We'd do it, and we'd work on the story with him, whatever the story happened to be. Walt really more or less put the story together, but we made suggestions for it. But Walt and I never got along too well. It just blew up one day.
He was pretty demanding, huh? To work.
He told me that he thought I was doing very well, that I was, you know, but he had to have a whipping boy, and I happened to be the guy. Because I was a little guy, and I looked like the one who would take it. That's how I came into the picture, because Walt had another man working there about my size. In fact, he was a little smaller than I was, called Ham Hamilton. And I don't know if you ever heard that name before, but he was one of the first animators to work for Walt Disney. I think it was even before Ub Iwerks. And he was his whipping boy. And he just had it up to here.
Were you one to snap back, or were you pretty sensitive?
Well, I snapped back.
Took it all to heart.
I was sensitive, oversensitive, I guess. But if he had a remark to make, it was usually against me, if he was really mad at somebody else, you know. But he included me in it. I'm probably going into deep detail that probably don't need to hear, but an example is when I got fed up with some of the remarks he made, and I took him, I guess, more serious than he thought I did. I just thought, hell, this guy's got pipe dreams.
I don't see a glass top there.
No, there's no glass top. I worked for myself down. Offered a while, but I don't think he really forgot what I told him. You know, I think it really bothered him. How I happened to leave was I picked up boils or something, I don't know what it was, and I decided to go see a movie. I didn't want to work that day or something. I went out to Carthay Circle to see a picture, and at the time they had double-decker buses like they had in New York, you know, where people would ride on top of Wilshire Boulevard.
They used to have that.
I was sitting at the top, but I looked down, there's Walt Disney and his crew.
You were telling me about Disney.
Oh, and and how
you were right down to almost leaving. He called you in his office because he saw you weren't sure if he saw you.
And then he peed me off. I got really peed off at him. When he started questioning me about not being there, he says, "Are you ready to go to work now?" And so I was really burnt from not seeing my desk cleared off. I said, "Look, Walt, I don't think we're going to get along. I can give you 2 weeks' notice, you know?" I was anxious to go home anyhow. I guess I was still a country boy.
Yeah, you had an itch to get back anyhow.
Yeah, and I never felt like I was doing much or learning much. I felt I was doing just well over there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see the big future he was talking about. He didn't either. I don't think he really could see what the future was. So, with his consent and everything, I left and I went back to Kansas City, worked at a film ad again.
Before we leave that now, was there anything you did with Disney that was particularly outstanding? Something
I don't think so.
I was
working on Oswald the Rabbit, a thing called Oswald.
For Disney, that was before Disney. It was handed over to
it really, Oswald the Rabbit belonged to Charlie Mintz. At the time, Disney was making films for Charlie Mintz. Charlie Mintz was selling to Universal.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, Charlie Mintz was the middleman.
I see.
And I went back to Kansas City, went to work at a film ad service there. And I kept in contact with Hugh Harmon. He wrote to me, he says, "We're all leaving Walt. We're going with Charlie Mintz.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like..." They wrote to him. Charlie Mintz wrote to me and asked me if I wanted to come to work there.
Did they have similar problems? Is that why they were leaving?
Well, apparently he was kingpin and...
Mintz was?
Walt.
Uh-huh.
And nobody's really going to be anybody but Walt.
Uh-huh.
They knew that. I think everybody felt that mm-hmm. all you were going to do was be an employee of Walt mm-hmm. Disney. Although nobody knew the great future of this industry, they figured whether this was it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know, but at least everybody felt that they wanted to have some say in what they were doing, I mm-hmm. guess. That's the reason. So anyhow, they wrote to me and asked me if I wanted to come out. So I came out back to California. And there was Hugh Harmon had left, and Rudy Isinger left, and Hamilton, of course, had already been gone, so he went to work for Mintz. And Walter Lantz came out to work for Charlie Mintz, too. So we all worked on Oswald the Rabbit,
mm-hmm.
which left Walt out, and Hub Iwerks decided to stay with Walt. And he started the Mickey Mouse thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, Walt Lantz, somehow through his political connections, took away Oswald the Rabbit from Charles Mintz and got it for himself to Universal Studios, And Charles Mintz was left out in the dark, and we were all out of jobs. And Walter Lantz went to work, started making Oswald the Rabbit mm-hmm. over at Universal mm-hmm. Studios. So we got together, we said, "Well, let's us make cartoons ourselves." So we came up with a character called Bosco.
Oh, yeah.
Bosco, at that time, Bosco was being...
this is pretty much...
That's Oswald the Rabbit, yeah. Yes. That's the one. That's the one that we did with Disney and with Walt Lantz did.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it with... Anyhow, Hugh Harmon, Rudy Ising, and myself and Hamilton decided to make our own cartoons. So we opened a little studio at the Otto K. Olsen building on Vine Street. Doesn't exist today, but it was Vine and one block north of Sunset Boulevard. I don't know what that street is. It was the Otto K. Olsen building, and we had offices there. And we decided that when sound came in, we produced some sound. We got that for free. None of us had any money, so there were some studios who were experimenting with sound, and we got them, asked them if we could use their facilities, and we did some singing, dialogue, we did piano playing, and we just did a sample reel of making a character talk and dance and sing and play the piano, which we had Bosco doing. We drew Bosco at that time, which was a derivative of Mickey Mouse, really. They all looked the same, all the characters did. So we made this film while Walt was making Mickey Mouse and Silent. So we really beat Walt to the punch on sound, but Walt turned around when he finished that and he put sound to Steamboat Willie. It wasn't made for sound, it was made silent. And Ub, I animated it. And so he put sound effects with it. I mean, it made a big hit. So then I went to New York with the film.
People tend to think that's almost the first sound.
Yes, it did.
And it wasn't.
Well, it wasn't. We didn't get ours on the screen. You see, I took it to New York and tried to sell it. They said, well, yeah, we see you can make sound pictures, but this is not a full film. See, we made the mistake of not making a full film, or else we would have been off to the races at that time. So I peddled that for a while. I couldn't get anywhere with it because they said, yeah, that's fine, you know, but where's the film? You know, where's the story? Which was the first thing we should have thought of. But, you know, you learn by your mistakes.
And we started somewhere.
We weren't that experienced in the field anyhow. Picture making. Well, anyhow, I went to work for Charlie Mintz in New York, doing Crazy Cat, while Hugh and Rudy were out here, trying to get connections to make to do a film. And finally, they met a fellow by the name of Leon Schlesinger. I said Warner Brothers wanted some cartoons. And so they made a deal with Warner, with Leon Schlesinger through Warner Brothers to make animated cartoons. So they wrote to me. We used to correspond quite often with telegrams and everything else. And I came back here, and we made the first Looney Tune called Sinking in the Bathtub. Hugh, Rudy, and myself.
It's Crazy Cat.
Yeah, we were doing Crazy Cat. I was doing Crazy Cat in New York for Charlie Mintz.
You get a picture of it. Yeah.
So Hugh and Rudy and I made the first Looney Tune. We started making a series of Looney Tunes, and they were Warner released them, and they were so successful. Warner wanted another 13. So we made another 13. So we were making 26. This is all through Leon Schlesinger.
So you were a director at the time, or just?
I was an animator.
Just an animator.
Well, I animated for a while. I started picking up and doing directing after about the, I think I have a list, and maybe after a year or two after we were in making pictures, I started directing a couple of them. But I was an animator at that time. Hugh was not. We all animated, really. We made up the stories, and we just sat in a meeting in the evening. We'd talk about it. We'd jot down notes, and Hugh would hand out scenes to to different various guys.
A lot of cooks in the kitchen kind of
helped. Yeah, everybody worked together. It was like a team. It wasn't like today you have your producer and your director and so forth. We were just a baseball team.
Throwing around a lot of ideas.
And, that's right. And just put it down and go with it. And just animate scenes and put it all together and make a picture out of it. But then we were spending more money than we were getting for them. So Hugh, who probably was a self-appointed president of the company, if we call it a company, demanded more money from Schlesinger, and he said, no, I'm not going to give it to you. So he just started his own studio. He said, I'll get my own people. So he did. He hired Tom Palmer and a few guys from Disney. And we went and did a few films for Terry Toons, just where we get work to do. And he made about three or four pictures, and Warners wouldn't accept them. He says they're not up to standard. So then he came, got in touch with me, and asked me to come to direct for him. And we negotiated a while. Meanwhile, Hugh and Rudy made contact with MGM and started making cartoons for MGM. And I decided to go with Leon Schlesinger. So I went over there and I started directing his cartoons. And the first cartoon I made was called Beauty and the Beast or something. It was the first color cartoon. But the first cartoon I made was accepted by Warner Bros. And they thought it was up to standard. And I kept making cartoons for them. And then they hired more people because I couldn't do them all. So they hired a guy by the name of Tex Avery, who did it, and then Bob Clampett came in, who was an animator. He came into the picture, and he fell by the name of Frank Tashlin.
Was Clampett a fellow animator?
Yes, he animated for me.
While you directed?
Yeah, I was directing. I directed from the time, about the second year we were in it, I was directing from then on. But we were more than directors, we were really producers.
I got lost just a little bit. Now, you went over to MGM, but you still did some...
No, I didn't. Harmon and Isaac went to MGM, I went to Schlesinger.
I see.
Schlesinger was a middleman, and we were making pictures for him.
I see.
Then MGM wanted a cartoon, so Rudy and Isaac started making them for MGM.
I see.
And I went with Leon Schlesinger, so we split up there.
Because I knew you were MGM director for a while, but that was later.
Oh, that was later. Yeah. That was later. I directed for... I hired from... You heard Bugs Hardaway. I hired two fellows that worked back there that I knew. I didn't know people out here, but I figured they could be of some help in writing because I thought they were funny guys myself. A fellow by the name of Tubby Millar, who was a cartoonist, really a newspaper cartoonist. Bugs Hardaway was a newspaper cartoonist, really. And he came out and worked in my story department. I had a brother that I hired also to work as a writer. They were gag men, really. They really weren't writers. And then Tex Avery came into the picture, became director. Clampett, Frank Tashlin, who later did feature pictures for, he left animation, did Red Skelton pictures, and he did Jerry Lewis's shows, did quite a number of very successful pictures. And then Bugs Hardaway directed a few, and a fellow by the name of R. Davis, they kept adding because it got up to where we were making 48 cartoons a year.
That's quite a bit.
Because the demand at that time they were only in theaters, mm-hmm. and the theaters were running one a week, and they changed it, you know, or sometimes they'd run 2 weeks, then they'd go to second run, mm-hmm. third run, mm-hmm. on down the line.
You didn't have such a big screening room as a theater, but did you ever go to a theater just to see what the impact was?
Oh, I always went to a theater.
You went to the
every
theater?
Every time I was at a theater, if I knew a picture was playing there,
just to see
it was very gratifying.
What kind
of
response?
Yes, and it was gratifying because wherever I planned a laugh, there was one.
Uh-huh.
90, well, I don't say every time, but 90% of the time I seemed to be very successful, mm-hmm. in planning a gag and planning that it would a laugh would happen,
yeah,
there, and
yeah,
it did.
Yeah.
In fact, I knew my picture so well I could sit in the back of the theater or in the lobby and hear the laughter. I knew what part of the cartoon, yeah, was being shown. You know, you got to know your film,
uh-huh.
that well.
Uh-huh.
Oh yes, that was a gratifying part of it, more than the money at the time. Later on, as you get older, it's the money.
Why don't
more
you think
important.
That there's not more cartoons in feature films today? Do you think that
you mean in the theaters?
Yes, uh-huh. No, you don't see that many, you know, cartoons.
You won't see any.
No,
we're the last ones. This studio right here was the last one to make them for the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you're going to see them in theaters anymore, because first place, I think, although I think your audiences would love it, the theater managers figure they just eat up time where they could be selling popcorn,
mm-hmm.
at that time, or
mm-hmm.
selling candy bars,
mm-hmm.
during the intermission.
Yeah.
And that's when they used to run the cartoon just ahead of the show. They'd run in and leave the lobby to run in and see the cartoon. And,
yeah, and of course, television bought them up. And
well, television, you see, I feel this, that the people who, when I made cartoons, I really never made them for children.
Mm-hmm.
I made cartoons, yeah, for adults. I made them for myself. I was young then, too. So I made them for myself, really, for the younger people,
mm-hmm.
who enjoy it. Today, and that when I go to theater at that time, I wouldn't see the children in that audience,
mm-hmm.
at night. You might see a scattered few, but at night they were all adults.
Mm-hmm.
And the adults, when the big circle came up, they all applauded, you know, and they laughed.
The Looney Tunes circle.
Yeah, yeah. The Looney Tunes circle came on the screen. Yeah, da 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 da.
Yeah.
Boom! They all applauded.
Yeah. Yeah.
They enjoyed animation.
Good was about to come up. Yeah.
They enjoyed animation very much, and I made them for that audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that in mind. Well, now today, animation is for children.
Mm-hmm.
They're labeled right off the bat. Animation
so the
for children.
Style had to change quite a bit. The jokes had to change quite a bit.
Well, they make us, but I don't like to do them that way. I like,
yeah,
to still make them for all. But I think that the television audience is, when the young, well, I would say the young adult. I mean the young. I don't mean teenagers, but
mm-hmm.
I mean past 40. Still enjoy animation and would love to see it, but they're being robbed of it because they don't get it on TV and they don't get it in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they stay home and watch it on Saturday morning, they're not going to see animation. Except once in a while they see a special of Dr. Seuss, but they're really made for children, you know, or see a Peanuts, you know. You get,
well,
to
I
see
watch
a special.
Your cartoons all the time in the afternoon. That's,
yeah, well, that's where
Friday.
You have to see,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to make a point of seeing it that way. That's,
mm-hmm.
the only way you're going to see it. But television, I still think that animation could be for nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
They could be, well, they got a lot of bad shows on TV today. They can't be worse than that.
Yeah.
But because they're on children's programming, they're earmarked for children.
Mm-hmm.
And so animation, adults are not getting it. I think someday your producers or your television executives are going to get wise, and somebody, I think, like Freddie Silverman or somebody, are going to put it on and are going to be successful, and everybody's going to jump on the bandwagon.
Well, personally, it's disturbing to me that I see so much so many fantastic cartoons, just classic cartoons, you know, and they put on at the deadest time when no one really watch them.
Yeah.
And then on Saturday morning prime time, you find a lot of just junk.
Yeah.
No offense to your Pink Panther.
That's right.
You know, but there is a lot of, you know, there is a lot of just...
Pink Panther is not made, of course, the first ones were made for
adults.
For adults.
Yeah. The first one was made as really, is kind of a, for the Pink Panther movie, is that how it first began?
Peter the title. Sellers. We're making one right now for the next one.
There's a Pink Panther 3 now?
It's the fourth one.
Fourth
it's
one
called
already.
The Revenge of the Pink Panther, which will be out in July.
Uh-huh.
And we're right now in the process of making the title for that show. And our very
that's
first
really how
one,
it all began.
Our very first Pink Panther was devised for... the Pink Panther feature.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it all began. And it was so successful that all the critics gave the title a lot of mention more than they did the feature. In fact, some of them said that the titles were better than the picture itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so United Artists and Harold Mirce got together with us and said, decided to make shorts for the theater. Figured that the Pink Panther was going to be a popular character. So I directed and storyboarded the first short subject, which was the Pink Fink, and it won Academy Award, the very first one I ever made.
Hmm.
And so that launched us into this business.
We took a big jump ahead. We left you back at Warner Brothers.
Yeah. I stayed at Warner Brothers until about 39. And MGM tempted me because Hugh Harmon and Rudy Eisen didn't work out with MGM. I guess they didn't get along.
They kind of want to gel along.
I don't know, but anyhow, it didn't work out with Hugh Harmon, Rudy Eisen, with MGM. Although they made some good cartoons, I think the costs kept going up and up.
While you were working under Schlesinger, was there any things that were there any characters you designed or any particular lines that you are famous for?
Well. I did a series called Sylvester and Tweety Pie. I did Yosemite Sam. I did Porky Pig. The first character I ever designed and created for Warner's that was successful was Porky Pig.
Mm-hmm.
In a little short that was, he's one of the few characters it was in it, but he stuttered and had a little more distinct character than the rest of us. So they didn't really have a main character. Because when...
How'd you get the idea for Porky?
Porky? Well, yeah. Because I knew as a kid I had some friends, young friends, two fat boys, two brothers. One was called, he was nicknamed Porky, and one was Piggy. The young brother was Piggy, one was Porky. And I always thought I was going to make a strip with Porky and the kids named Porky and Piggy.
Mm-hmm.
Not pigs, but just kids.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought about doing a cartoon strip of that, but I never did. And I got in this and the first thing, of course, all the characters were animal characters.
Mm-hmm.
When there was a pig in there, I thought, well, I'll put Porky in, you know. And to give him, that's how Mel Blanc got it, by the way. I had this character called Porky, and I wanted him to stutter, and he was to get up in class. It was a classroom with kids. One was called, two twins was called Ham and X, two little dogs. And there was a little, another character called a little owl. Character. Mm-hmm. We're all just little animal characters. and the pig was called Porky. And I wanted him to get up and recite the ride of Paul Revere. So I found a guy who stuttered, which was, worst thing I could have done. And at that time, all sound was put on film.
You found one.
I searched.
Was he a voice man at the time? And
well, I searched through the agencies and found a guy who stuttered.
Mm-hmm.
But he was an actor who did Western parts, but he never spoke. But they said, the agents said that, he stuttered. So being kind of naive about actors, I hired this guy to do the voice of Porky Pig.
Mm-hmm.
And I sped the voice to give it a high-pitched quality, which, by the way, there's a long story about that. I'll tell you later. So I used this guy to recite the ride of Paul Revere, and he got up in front of me. And we were using film at the time instead of tape.
Uh-huh.
And it was very expensive. And he got up and he'd say, listen, my children, you should hear the me. He couldn't get it. And he got more nervous the worse he got. That way, the more nervous he got, the worse he got. It was a vicious cycle. So I just couldn't handle him, because it was just too much, just forever and ever. He couldn't get through that ride of Paul Revere. So I said, I got to find somebody who can imitate a stutter. and control his stuttering. So there was a fellow by the name of Henry Charles at KFWB, and we were on that lot on Sunset Boulevard. That's where our studio was, on the old Warner lot. It's a white building on Van Nuys, on Sunset and Bronson.
Mm-hmm.
There's a white, big pillars, look like a southern colonial mansion, That was one of the original Warner, but that's where our cartoon studio was.
Hmm.
And they had a radio station there, and there was a fellow by the name of Henry Charles who did a radio show. He says, I got a brother who stutters. Does voices, and he could do that stutter. Why don't you give him a chance? That man happened to be Mel Blanc. So I called Mel Blanc in, and he did that voice. And from then on, he did the voice. And then we used him for another one. After a while, he did all our voices.
Mm-hmm.
Did Bugs Bunny, and he does everybody. Tweety Pie, and we. So what I was going to say is that when I was at MGM, they were making The Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
Mervyn LeRoy was making The Wizard of Oz, and he had a problem with the Munchkins. And he came to us and he says, how do you get that voice like a Porky Pig, high-pitched voice? So I suggest that. I says, why don't you record the voices of the Munchkins, speed them up, and then have the Munchkins do it to a playback, a sped playback.
Loop.
Yeah, well, they play it, and then they would act mouth to that.
Uh-huh.
So he did it. Then he was called a genius because he thought of that. He's noted for that. What a great brain this man had, who worked out this Munchkin voice. So anyhow, it came from just what we did, because it was like turning a phonograph record at the time. Mm-hmm. That's what I asked for, and the engineers knew how to do it. I didn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
But all I said is, I want a voice. If I took a record and sped it, at that time it was records,
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of voice I want, so they did it. So anyhow, Mervyn LeRoy got a great credit for being a genius of inventing that way of working with the playback. Well, I went to MGM and I did the Captain and the Kids there. And of course I hadn't planned on that, because the producer there by the name of Quimby, Fred Quimby, promised me, he says, you come over, he says, what are you going to do when you come over? I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, I don't know what characters I'll do. He said, well, when you come over. See, I had about 4 months to go on my contract at Warner Brothers. So I had signed a contract with them. Mine was in August, and theirs was October. The pickup there, the MGM contract started in October. So I was still at Warner's for 4 months. Meanwhile, MGM decided to make Captain and the Kids. Notify me in any way. When I came over, they says, "Well, we decided we're going to make Captain and the Kids." I says, "Captain and the Kids." Those are Dutch voices, German voices. You know, they speak broken English. I said, "They're not very likable kids. They're mean little kids to start with, and they're humans." I said, "You're never going to have success with that." Pardon me, I'll have a third one for yours. Oh, I was ready to pull out for a minute before I left. Yeah, and we were off to the races.
Now, after the first initial Pink Panther, you had a little bit of some money to move to a permanent location.
Started the first cartoon in 1930, and the last one in 1964. So no go, we can't throw away the Pink Panther. He said, "Well, you're not going to make United Artists Pictures on my lot." So he says, "Get your ass off of my lot." And Ventura Boulevard, we took over the whole sixth floor.
Mm-hmm.
The Union Bank building there, we stayed there for 5 years, and then we went into this building.
You got a lot of room here now, huh?
Yeah, it was about 20,000 square feet.
How long have you been here now?
Well, we've been here about 9 years.
Now, just so I get some idea, how many years were you at Warner Brothers to begin?
30. I started the first Looney Tune. That's excluding the time I spent at MGM.
Yeah, how many years were you over there?
I was only there about a year.
About a year?
Yeah, I came tearing back to Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers was my home.
It's a good long stretch for Warner Brothers.
Yeah, I started the first cartoon in 1930, and the last one in 1964.
64. And that was Bugs Bunny, or?
That was... Well, I have a list of, but the last year there I won.
The list would be helpful.
That was the first, the cartoon I made, Bugs Bunny was created 15 years before that,
mm-hmm.
but he could never win an Academy Award. And then the last year I was there, I won an Academy Award with Bugs Bunny called 99 Bugs.
Did you do a Bugs Bunny Christmas special here? I thought I saw that somewhere that you had done one.
An Easter special.
An Easter special. A Bugs Bunny Easter special. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Using some of the old films.
Now, how is it that they ask you to do that now? I mean, how come Warner Brothers doesn't have anyone down there to get that together?
They started cartoons. They started with two or three fellows.
Mm-hmm.
But they were all flops, uh-huh. So they gave it up altogether.
Uh-huh. So it didn't last more than a year or so?
Without, I guess without the people, the original people who did these things, it just didn't work anymore. I think it just came from the people themselves. From myself, from Chuck, from Bob McKimson, without those people, it just didn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. They just couldn't cut the mustard. And after about 5 years, I think they tried it, but I think it went on for about 5 years, that they just threw in the sponge.
So with your own company now, you have a lot of freedom to do all the things that you really wanted to do. And
what I would want, brothers, we did whatever we wanted to do. Whatever. The man who was representing. Well, with Warner Brothers, we did whatever we wanted to do. We really, the reason I think they were successful there is that nobody told us what to do. Today, the network tells you what to do. You can't make the cartoons like we used to. Mm-hmm. Because our thinking, we have to employ the network's thinking.
Yeah.
There's always people who do not know.
They say it's a little too violent, trying to make it a little less violent.
They're dictating the stories, and they're dictating the style of the show, and they're dictating what...
Yeah, I recently interviewed Faith Heckman at CBS.
Yeah.
And I noticed that she's now picking up Popeye.
Yeah.
And I noticed she was doing that. But while I was at the meeting, Popeye scripts were coming into her, and she was saying, well, that's not funny.
So it's so hard to make friends out of them, you know? You didn't know that I was due for a flop. What I meant in the studio. We're doing the Dr. Seuss now. We're doing the Pink Panther Christmas special right now for daytime. Mm-hmm.
But what I would be
a half hour. What?
Now, what is that like to take some...
It just, you have to build it here.
Mm-hmm. I just interviewed Marvin Miller. How did you come across using his voice?
Marvin Miller did some records for years ago, mm-hmm. For the records. Marvin Miller was, 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I suppose.
And so you liked his voice and you decided to
use him? Well, we don't use Marvin Miller.
Well, I thought you used him in the Pink Panther as a narrator.
Only maybe one show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just had him sign this for me. The Pink Panther's TV narrator. Should I give him credit?
We don't have a narrator.
You don't?
No.
Like, he considers himself like an announcer.
We don't do that. Maybe we did one. Marvin Miller's done work for us,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think he's done it on Pink Panther. I don't recall it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we don't use a narrator.
Now, I saw also in the lobby that you did the Charlie the Tuna.
Yeah.
You do that still?
That's commercial.
You still do that?
No, we haven't done that for years. We originated. Uh-huh. And they took it away and gave it to somebody else.
Uh-huh.
We've done a lot of things like that. We originated and then they take it to some other producer.
It travels around, yeah.
Yeah. If the guy, the account executive or somebody likes somebody over there, then they take the account over there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we don't like commercials.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't own anything.
Are you doing any commercials now?
A few. If they come in, we don't seek it.
Mm-hmm.
If it comes in the door and we can make money on it, we'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't go out looking for it.
Yeah. Now, are you doing most of your work now for, do you still like to keep it somewhat to an adult audience or?
Well, we have to do it for a children's audience. I mean, that's a TV, yes.
Uh-huh.
Our shorts are, no, we're not doing, we're not doing it with, we write our shows for kids today. Mm-hmm. Now we're doing Marvel comics, you know. These are really purely kid stuff, you know, Spider-Man, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What is it for? You know, but adults are watching on TV and live.
Mm-hmm. And, how did the Pink Panther TV show start getting the canned laughter happening? Was that?
Well.
You think the children are a little bored with it, that they need that?
Well, you feel that some people feel that you need an audience to, you can't sit and laugh alone.
Mm-hmm.
Some people feel that if you feel that there's a crowd around you,
mm-hmm.
if they laugh, you laugh with them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it's artificial. Some people don't recognize it. Some people feel that it is no way to see a show. that's designed for an audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like putting Jack Benny in front of one guy and have him act. You know.
Yeah, I see.
You know, he ain't gonna do it.
Yeah.
Fortunately, like All in the Family, they do it right in front of an audience, and they can feel the success of it. It's not canned laughter, but in a cartoon, you're not gonna have that unless you take it out and preview it and run it for people. But nobody's gonna bother with that.
The Pink Panther is really a classic looking character, you know, with the long lines it has. Mm-hmm. Is that your style? Do you have a style?
No, we don't have any definite style, I don't think. See, we have different people designing things today.
Mm-hmm.
I used to sit down and do my own thing on it and set over a board and did it myself, timed it, set it up, and every scene was mine.
Mm-hmm.
Today, you can't do that. I did 60 minutes a year before when I was at Warner Bros. Now we do 34 half hours in 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
No one man can do it. No two men can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to work factory-wise, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's to work like a factory. One guy does this, one guy does that, one guy does that. And so you don't get the result that you would if you had it yourself.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that the Pink Panther Christmas special was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
What other things can you see your company doing in the next few years? What things would you like to do that you haven't done yet?
Well, we got another one coming up the following year. I mean, I'm planning now for the next Pink Panther. I want to do a musical with him.
The Pink Panther.
Mm-hmm. Since he can't speak, you have to devise ways of telling a show without voice. And nobody else can speak in it either, because he becomes a mute if he's the only one that doesn't speak. When we first started, we had to try to voices for him. You know, we must have dozens and dozens of voices. Nothing worked, because he was originally conceived in the title, which was silent.
Mm-hmm.
In a sophisticated way, you couldn't think of a voice for him any more than you could for Chaplin.
The Henry Mancini music made it so nice, too.
That's what it did.
It just kept it
moving.
It's
a combination of that plus a Mancini theme.
Yes.
And you take either one of them away, and you've lost it. You can't take that music away from him.
Henry Mancini still does the music for you?
Mm-mm.
No.
We do it. It's his music. He gets paid. But we score it.
You still work with him?
Yeah. Oh, he wouldn't do it. He does features. He hasn't got time to do shorts.
Yeah. So you're going to
be... We write our own arrangements.
Busy enough with Pink Panther, you think, right now?
We're doing Pink Panther. See, this year we're doing 32 Pink Panthers. We're doing a new character called Crazy Legs Crane.
Mm-hmm.
A new short. We're doing...
What's the essence of that character?
Well, he's Crane is a sort of a Red Skelton kind of a character. With a dragonfly. He works with a dragonfly. Mm-hmm. It's a pursuit of a dragonfly.
Is this something like for Saturday morning?
Yes, it is for Saturday morning. It goes in the Pink Panther show.
Mm-hmm.
There's two Pink Panthers and one Crazy Leg Crane to make up a half hour.
I see.
That will go on this fall. And we're doing the Phantom Four Marvel Comics thing for NBC. The Pink Panther goes to ABC.
It's one of those superheroes, huh?
Yeah, superhero stuff. Then we're doing the special, Pink Panther special, Christmas special. And we're doing the Dr. Seuss.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're doing the titles for the Pink Panther feature. That's what we're doing this year, basically. Plus commercials and things like that that come along. Basically, that's what this year is. Next year, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be on the selling season. Within a few months, we'll be out trying to sell shows. we don't know where we're going because the network don't know what they want yet. Mm-hmm. So they'll let that stuff run for 2 or 3 months and see what happens. If it's some of the, like the Marvel comics are a big hit, so that's what they'll be buying for next year. Mm-hmm. They won't be buying comedy. If they're flops, so they'll probably turn around and buy comedy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we really don't know. You kind of have to feel the air and see, you know, what the atmosphere is.
What's in demand.
Yeah. So that's why the networks get into it.
I just want to mention this also, in case someone else saw it. There was a Pink Panther dance number, and I forget where I saw it, in some television show where a bunch of Pink Panthers were dancing with one person. It was like they were, must have been 15 or 20 dancers, and they had beautiful Pink Panther costumes on.
It did. I don't know.
I don't remember that.
I don't know that.
Yeah.
You mean like Vegas or somewhere?
It was for a television special.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, if there were, can you give me, let's say, some of the people who work for you now, some of the cartoonists and people, would you like to mention some of the names you have now with you?
Well, it's hard to name one without another.
Naming them all, but can you give me five of some of the heads of your department, perhaps?
Well, the John Dunn, who's a well-known writer, and probably the best we have. Bob Ogle's another writer. Dave Dedich is a writer and director. We have Lee Gunther is our production manager. We have Art Leonardi, who is a designer and director. Mm-hmm. We have Bob Richardson, who is a director and writer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not writer, he's a director and animator. We have Don Williams, who's been with us for 20 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
As an animator, Bob Matz, who's been with us since Warner days, also. We have a key group here that's been with us for 15 years or so.
It's a good tight group.
Then there's others that come in, come and go all the time. We have a man who's directing on the Dr. Seuss show, who comes in just to direct that show, and then he leaves. We have designers who are here and gone. They're 1 week, 1 month they're at Hanna-Barbera, and then next month, or 1 year they're at Hanna-Barbera, next year they're here. You know. They're shifters, but some of them are steady people who have been here 15 years or so, who we try to keep going.
Are you going to be behind this desk forever, or is there ever going to be a time where you're going to retire?
I hope not.
Really?
Right. I hope I'm productive the rest of my life.
Are you a workaholic, or are you one that likes to spend a lot of time at home? And what do you like to do with your spare time?
I just play golf. I just take maybe 2 days a week to play golf.
You're
a
golfer.
On Saturday, and I play on Thursday or Wednesday, and play, and that's it. You know, that's my diversion. Otherwise, it's this, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we about covered it, unless you have something that...
No, I've got a dinner date anyhow. I have to leave.
Fine. You mentioned getting a copy of... Could I copy some of that, or?
Well, you can't now because my girl is gone.
Might come another time.
Yes, I could give you.
It's available to have copied. I mean,
I can have it Xerox for you. I think there's a lot of it.
That'd be fantastic, if it's not too much trouble.
Well, I'll find out what I.
Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.